The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Yes, it is, and welcome back. Thursday, November 14th, 2019, as we start off our three-hour tour today, no one better to start it off with than Andy Biggs, congressman from Arizona's 5th Congressional District, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. Andy, thanks for spending some time with us. I know how busy you are, but you had a great op-ed in the USA Today. Today, when impeachment proof falls short, Democrats shift the goalposts. They do that, don't they?
Yes, Seth. Good to be with you, as always.
Thank you, sir. I was rereading your op-ed. I read it when it first came out, when I first saw it this morning. I was just rereading it about 15 minutes ago. And there is this funny thing about this quote-unquote whistleblower and Adam Schiff talking about shifting goalposts. Adam Schiff is on record, on television, on national television, as recently as September, saying he was looking forward to hearing from the whistleblower and that the only thing holding that up was the security clearance for his attorneys. What an odd change we've hit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, so what we do know now is at the time Schiff was saying that, he was also denying that he or his staff had met with the whistleblower before the complaint was drafted and transmitted to the inspector general. But all of that was not true. He and his staff had contact with the whistleblower. Perhaps, we don't know, because we don't know the whistleblower. Well, we think we know, but we don't know for sure who the whistleblower is. Schiff has denied this. His staff has denied it, that they perhaps it helped draft the complaint itself. And then he was all gung-ho to have him out. Again, let's wait for the clearance of the person we now know as Stephen Zaid, who is the attorney for the whistleblower.
Right.
Well, and then Schiff has the temerity to act like he doesn't know who the whistleblower is, and yet if you go anywhere near it, he says, well, yeah, I had no contact with this guy. I don't know who the whistleblower is. I've never known who the whistleblower is.
This is likely why he doesn't want the whistleblower to testify, right? Because the whistleblower, quote-unquote whistleblower, would be under oath and would be able to tell what Adam Schiff has been lying about. I'm guessing.
Well,
I mean, we don't know, but that would be certainly one reason.
That would be one reason to keep him under wraps is to
protect Adam Schiff.
Now, yeah, you can't. He's going to blow the whistle,
yeah.
Not just on anything else, but he's going to have direct evidence on me.
Yeah,
he has this. The whistleblower has no direct evidence anywhere else about anything else contained in that complaint. And actually, frankly, he's a leaker. And Seth, what's important for people to understand is someone who was on that phone call, which, by the way, is classified.
Right.
Someone leaked the contents of that phone call outside the apparatus of the statutory code,
right,
which governs this.
Right.
And if you do that, let's say that whoever listened in had the highest classification there
sure.
was.
Sure, sure.
And let's say somebody else had the highest classification. Unless there was a need to know or there were caveats or some other statutory rationale for that message to be shared, anything shared is a felony
sure.
subject to 10 years in prison.
Absolutely.
And if you do share it, if you share it electronically, everything is the property of the federal government.
That's
and
right.
you have to turn that over.
That's
if
right.
you share it orally, you need to do it in a secured a room, a skiff.
Right. We're talking about violations of the Espionage Act. We're talking about
exactly.
possession of stolen goods. We're talking about violations of non-disclosure agreements. Absolutely, Andy. This is something that makes government impossible, makes foreign relations or any other kind of classified conversation in the operation of your authority impossible. Impossible to do. You cannot do it.
Right. And the reason that this was actually transmitted and leaked, actually released the actual transcript from the president, was because of the false statements by Adam Schiff.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were blatant and they were false, and he didn't think that there was any way in the world that the president would release the transcript. And you know what? He got caught lying again, just like he lied about the Russian collusion, just like he's lied repeatedly. And, I mean, Trey Gowdy, who was the chairman until he retired from Congress last January, he said Adam Schiff leaks like a sieve, sure, like a screen door in a submarine.
It's pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious where the New York Times and the Washington Post has been getting their information, selective, that you point out in your USA Today op-ed. Yesterday, you were watching as closely as anyone. I watched it, I think, as closely as anyone as well from where I was here in Phoenix, Andy. We're talking to Andy Biggs. And it was a very funny thing that I saw, because I was watching like LBJ with the three TVs. I had MSNBC, CNN, and Fox going. They're just different networks, still three TVs. But, you know, MSNBC and CNN kept talking about bombshells that were let off yesterday. I got to tell you, you know, of course, I have my own opinions about these things, but I was looking to see what the Democrats could bring to the table here. I didn't see any bombshell. I saw water guns at best. Did you see anything that concerned you at all yesterday? At all?
No, I didn't. And let me just tell you why this is important. I realize I have a bias. I'm looking through the eyes of a trial attorney.
Yeah.
I'm looking through the eyes of a guy who says, if there's something really, really bad, I need to know what it is.
Yeah, so we want to figure out. Right, we have to protect
know.
Our case. Yeah, that's
exactly
the way I was looking at it. Where am I wrong? That's
exactly
what I was looking for. Yeah.
And I'm watching this thing. Well, first of all, the fact that you and I watched all day long shows that we have nothing better to do with our lives, because I'm telling you, most Americans turned off that TV within the first 10 minutes.
That's actually not an unimportant point. Well,
yeah,
I want to get to the
it's
the politics of it that I do want to ask you about in a second.
They turned it off. It was so boring. And then 41 minutes, Ambassador Taylor lectured us about the Ukraine and how marvelous it is and what he knows and what nobody else knows but him. And then Mr. Kent, he did his shtick. But the bottom line was this. There was nothing new, nothing different from what we said, from anything that we've heard before. And it was just delivered in a monotonous, monotone, kind of a stilted, dirge-like fashion.
Yeah. Well, that does kind of get to that point I wanted to ask you about. You were alluding to about people not watching, not tuning in. Yeah, there's a blue wall. There's people who are going to remain convinced that Donald Trump needs to go. Can't do anything about that. But for the vast majority of people that don't pay close attention to politics, I don't think anything happened yesterday or will happen tomorrow or next week. I don't think that is going to move people to say this is what the Democrats should have been spending their time on.
Agreed, 100%. But you know who I think was moved by that yesterday? Hmm. If you are a member of Congress who is a Democrat and you're in your first or second term and you got elected from a highly competitive district, a highly competitive district that Donald Trump won in 2016, you look at that and the last thing you want to do is go on the floor of the House and vote for impeachment, because there simply is nothing there.
I was thinking that, because we also have, speaking of Democrats who have changed their tune, Nancy Pelosi in May saying she wanted she wouldn't have impeachment hearings unless there was a bipartisan approach to it. There may be some bipartisanship to this, except in the other way, in the way of exoneration. No, I could see some Democrats hanging their hat on no evidence coming forward and voting against impeachment resolutions. Couldn't you? I could see some.
Yeah, already I could probably list five people that I think are going to vote no. I think that it might jump up by another 5 or 10.
Yeah.
And that makes it real dicey whether they actually even have the numbers to get to 218.
That's right.
And if they don't get the numbers, I mean, this is the disaster that Nancy Pelosi didn't want to have happen, but she got sucked into it by Adam Schiff's telling her something that probably was inaccurate, totally inaccurate.
Well, I'm thinking there's that, and I'm thinking, you know, it's funny, these things, you know, you get the same amount of votes, maybe more, than Nancy Pelosi gets in her district or Adam Schiff gets in his district. She's this evidently national leader, but all she really hears is from her San Francisco Democrats, and Schiff is only hearing from his L.A. Democrats. I can see why they think there is big momentum for this. I don't feel that there is big momentum for this.
No, and I, you know, I'm not seeing it. So there was a Monmouth poll out 2 days ago, and it's in that poll, the results said 75% of Americans say the impeachment process has been unfair.
And
you know what that tells me is 2 weeks ago it was only 51% thought it was unfair. It is going against the Democrats. Also, the Democrats are going by national polling. And what that means is, it's oversampling the coasts, but when you go to districts that these people have marginal district or contested districts, it is significantly to the majority that say impeachment is bad. Don't impeach the president.
Yeah, Americans have, regardless of party, really have a fundamental sense of fairness. They really do, and they also like this thing we call elections. And we're heading into one. Do you got to run? I know I'm hearing our music. I'm happy to keep you, but if you got to run, I don't want to stop you from.
I wish I could stay and talk to you all day,
Andy. Steph, I love having you. And I noticed you're doing this thing now. Last time you were on the show, you used the word chutzpah. This time you used the word shtick. You're getting a second language in Yiddish over there. You know, we love you, Andy Biggs.
Thanks. Good to be with you, Seth.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Dan Henninger, you often see him on Fox News. He's a columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Conservative, not a Trump, not a natural Trump supporter. Just I'm not sure who he was supporting for the presidency in 2016. It wasn't Trump. He has not been kind to Trump on a lot of issues, as is just fine. He is an op-ed writer and a man of opinion. His piece today, though, the Takedown Trump Project in the Wall Street Journal, when it comes from a non-Trump conservative, I wanted to share some of it with you. Nancy Pelosi was right, because I think this is increasingly the view of people, especially after yesterday's dud. You know, it is funny to watch those mashups, MSNBC and NBC, excuse me, MSNBC and CNN commentators talking about these huge bombshells that went off in the impeachment hearings, trying to save Adam Schiff and the Democrats from themselves with these adjectival nouns, trying to ratchet up what didn't happen. It's somewhat amusing and I think not working, which is why I just saw that Fox News beat the competitors in the competition in impeachment coverage yesterday. Big surprise. That tells you another thing, too, doesn't it? If Fox News is beating CNN and MSNBC by big numbers in covering the impeachment, it kind of tells you something interesting. There's a lagging indicator to that, isn't there? Which is to say more right-leaning people were watching than left-leaning people. Right? Doesn't it? Doesn't it tell you that the natural viewer to Fox is more interested in it than the natural viewer to CNN and MSNBC? That means that the Democrats are losing their base on this thing. Losing their base on this thing. And those people Andy said were tuning out were probably not people like me and him, but people like the Democrats who were waiting to see a bombshell that never went. Anyway, Dan Henninger writes, Nancy Pelosi was right the first time. The Democrats shouldn't have done this. They should not have tried to make the already overwhelmed American public believe that Donald Trump's umpteenth norms violation was a constitutional crisis. But no, the party's leftmost elements insisted, and the Beltway press insisted, Mr. Trump had to be impeached. Once he had survived the Republican primaries in 2016 and then beaten Hillary Clinton by tapping into a slice of overlooked voters, most serious people got on with the business of coming to grips, if not terms, with this unconventional, pugnacious presidency. But not these people. The political and media left convinced themselves it was somehow possible to make the Trump presidency end before its November 2020 sell-by date. So here we are, three long years later, with Adam Schiff ending his opening impeachment statement by quoting Benjamin Franklin about a Republican, if you can keep it. That bad, huh? Let me pause on that. Every Democrat from Nancy Pelosi to now down to Adam Schiff is using that overworn statement. I like the notion behind it. You would think that they would be able to find something beyond that one line by Ben Franklin. That bad, huh? The testimony by the two U.S. ambassadors was fascinating, especially the account given by Bill Taylor, who, like many others, had the misfortune of finding himself in the center of one of Mr. Trump's foreign policy decisions.
In what he admitted was a lengthy statement, he described how the U.S.'s single-channel policy of helping Ukraine defend itself from Vladimir Putin's Russia suddenly became two channels after Rudy Giuliani introduced Mr. Trump's monomania over an earlier Ukrainian government possible collusion with the Democrats to defeat him, with the Democrats' effort to defeat him in 2016. Ambassador Taylor was correct that what the U.S. has been doing in Ukraine comported with the Trump national security strategy of resisting persistent aggressions by Russia and China. In early 2019, that included helping Ukraine's newly elected government and its young president stand up to Mr. Putin's murderous little green men in eastern Ukraine. Has anyone paused to stop to understand this point? Far from being a colluder with Russia, Donald Trump has been doing everything he can to cabin and curtail and push back Russia, including being the first president to give military armaments to the Ukraine to fight off Russian aggression, something the Obama-Biden administration would not do. So what else is new? Internal policy battles of this intensity are a constant of government life. Other than dragging in the Bidens, this is hardly different from a host of similar Trumpian foreign policy interventions. All these decisions that Donald Trump has made in foreign policy, and not the least the events with Ukraine, are absolutely valid voting issues for the next election. If you're disgusted by the Trump-Giuliani-Ukraine back channel, don't vote for him. But presidents are allowed to have emissaries who aren't sworn in, or excuse me, who aren't approved of by the United States Senate. Anyone heard of John Jay and George Washington? If you think Mr. Trump's protectionism and isolationism are bad for America's future, don't vote for him. It would have been valid as well if the Democrats had chosen to conduct normal oversight hearings into the Ukraine whistleblower's complaint, with witnesses called and questioned by both sides and the public allowed to watch and decide for themselves. But why are Americans being forced to endure the elevation of the Ukraine saga into the current impeachment melodrama? Presumably, the Democratic left and its allies believe the faux gravity of impeachment will grind down Mr. Trump's support at the margin and jack up anti-Trump turnout. One wonders. Once past the inevitable vote in the House to impeach, and then assuming Mitch McConnell even bothers to hold a Senate trial, this will be over by January or February. With impeachment, the Democrats finally have dropped their nuclear device on Donald Trump. And after that, what's left? No doubt many voters are sitting on the Trump bubble, uncertain whether to sign up for another spin with him or whatever the Democrats are supposed to represent now. Medicare for all? Former GOP House Speaker John Boehner's wheel-spinning term looks like a legislative golden age compared to what Ms. Pelosi has done with her majority. What the speaker may have recognized this summer is that the activists' takedown Trump project was turning into three wasted years, and that voters might go looking for someone to blame for that. Once the Adam Schiff show closes, undecided voters will have about 10 months to decide if his politics of pursuit and retribution has been worth the trouble. Let me tell you why I think the Democrats are panicked. I'll tell you why. Issues and insights. The day before the Schiff and Pelosi impeachment circus opened for its fall run in the House of Representatives, President Donald Trump gave a speech that we covered here at the Economic Club of New York. We spoke a lot about it, in which he laid out his argument for a second term. And he made it clear why Democrats are desperate to avoid talking about the economy. Whether you heard the speech or not, and obviously the vast majority of Americans didn't, they will feel and know what he is talking about. Trump began by resetting the clock back to 2016, and where the economic forecast was grim. He said the so-called experts said Americans had no choice but to accept stagnation, decay, and a shrinking middle class as the new normal. In short, the American people were told to sit back and accept a slow, inevitable decline. And then they were proven wrong. And it's not that the experts were proven wrong that's important. It's that the American people are feeling the benefits of what that wrongness is. I'll tell you about that when we come back. You You ever have those afternoons? I don't know. Maybe you're just tired from the night before. You put out all your energy in the early part of the day and you're just kind of sluggish. You know what dawned on me? I've been talking about balance of nature as a once a day fruits and vegetables supplement you can take to get more than your needed daily fare, wanted share of fruits and vegetables. But there's nothing that says you can't take it more than once a day. And so I was feeling a little sluggish this afternoon, and I thought, let's throw a little more fruit into my diet. And I did, and I took another dose of Balance of Nature fruits with apples, bananas, lemons, mangoes, pineapples, strawberries. Here I am. I'm feeling great. It's why we say if you're feeling run down and don't have the energy you used to, you want to look at Balance of Nature. I've been with them for several weeks now. Mike Gallagher's been with them for months. I like what he has to say.
Hey, Seth, like so many, I'm always on the go, and I don't often get to eat the way I know I should. That's one of the reasons I love Balance of Nature. All your healthy food groups, from fruits to vegetables, and then some, in really easy-to-take once-a-day capsules. You know you're getting everything you need, and you end up being healthier with a lot more energy, as you know you're giving your body what it wants and what it needs.
Balance of Nature capsules have no heat or air-dry processing. They're powdered by an advanced vacuum-cold process to stabilize the maximum nutrient content in all vegetarian caps. No meat products, no animal products used. Call or go online now. Become a preferred customer. Gives you their best pricing and free shipping. They'll take an additional 35% off your first order. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. $7.51 or go to balanceofnature.com and use the discount code BALANCE. I was saying that what Donald Trump talked about at the Economic Club of New York this week, whether people heard the speech or not, they certainly live with the effects of what he's talking about. Donald Trump said the so-called experts said that the American people were told to sit back and accept a slow, inevitable decline. The Congressional Budget Office projected that the number of jobs would increase by just 2 million from January of 2017 through the end of this year. The unemployment rate wasn't supposed to get below 4.4% and was slated to start rising again in 2019. The Congressional Budget Office said quarterly GDP growth over Trump's first 3 years would never top 2.6% and would average 2%. As Trump rightly explained, this wasn't inevitable. It was the result of an economy being suffocated by taxes and regulations. If we lifted these burdens from our economy and unleashed our people to pursue their ambitions and realize their limitless potential, then economic prosperity would come thundering back, he said. Sorry, Trump haters, but he was right. The economy has added three times as many jobs as the CBO had forecast. The unemployment rate is far lower than the CBO forecast. Quarterly GDP growth topped 3% in four quarters and has averaged over 2.6%. Trump also has a long list of economic gains to brag about, which, not surprisingly, he did in his speech in New York. The overall unemployment rate is the lowest it's been since the 1960s. For women, it's the lowest it's been since the 1940s. For minorities, it's lower than any time since the government started keeping records. Real wages are up more than 3%. 7 million people are off food stamps. 10,000 new factories have opened since he took office. Major stock indexes are up between 45 and 60%. And the U.S. is now a net exporter of oil and natural gas. The median family incomes have climbed $5,000 so far under his administration, or almost five times the increase in the 7.5 years Barack Obama presided over the recovery. This is what explains impeachment. Remember what Al Green of Texas said, Democrat of Texas, who filed the first impeachment bill. If we don't impeach him, he'll get reelected. Here's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez yesterday, by the way. Listen to this.
Today, we have to be able to come together as a caucus. And if it is this Ukrainian allegation that is what brings the caucus together, then I think we have to run with however we unify the House. And
yeah, this is something you're not supposed to say out loud. But this Ukrainian impeachment process is the way we have to unify the caucus. This is what impeachment is for, unifying the Democrats. You know, I've been talking about how poorly we do in civics on our nation's report card. You just need to look at the Democratic caucus right now when they think impeachment is a substitute for an election, which is a substitute for Democrats not liking the success of traditional Republican Party conservatism. It's not what impeachment's supposed to be about. I'm just glad Trump's the president. Not because I care for Trump, I've never met him, but because I care about these statistics and I care about this country. I'm Seth, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I'm Seth. I was talking with some policy wonk, political type friends a few weeks ago about agenda and Congress, and talking about what Republicans and others were doing on or could do on health care. And they were telling me about an interesting thing I had not thought much of and how big of a problem it was and how someone was actually, a bunch of people were actually getting together to do something about it. It's called surprise medical billing. And I was quick to learn how big of a problem this is. And they said, you need to talk to Timothy Lee at the Center for Individual Freedom. So we are going to talk to Timothy Lee at the Center for Individual Freedom. He's the Senior Vice President of Legal and Public Affairs. Welcome to the show, Mr. Lee.
Thanks a lot. It's always good to do an Arizona show. I'm an Arizona native, actually. So a voice inside the Beltway, but back to his home state of Arizona.
Well, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Welcome back. Where'd you go to high school?
Cactus High School.
I know of it. I was a rival. I was a rival. But actually, that's not a bad that's not a bad little segue in a sense, because I always like to ask first time guests to tell us just a little bit about themselves, where, what they do, where they grew up, how they came to be doing what they're doing.
Yeah, grew up in Phoenix and went to ASU undergrad, and so a proud Cactus Cobra, like I said. And if you're a Peoria Panther, I hope you don't just end the call now.
I'm not. I'm good. We're okay.
I'll tell you this, and at the risk of TMI, it's sort of I tell people this all the time. It's sort of a testament to the lucky life I've led and what a blessed life I've led, and knock on wood, I haven't had any major tragedies in my life. But the worst day of my life was the year, senior year of high school. We were undefeated, had already beaten Peoria, which was our hated arch rival, playing them in Sun Devil Stadium for the state title game. They beat us in the second game and we did not win the title. And to this day, I say, if I could change one day, it would be that way.
At least you're still not nursing and processing that resentment, I see. After all these years, Tim.
We're going to have a rematch at some point, like by our 50th high school reunion.
Okay. Tell us about the Center for Individual Freedom, and then I want to get into surprise medical billing.
Great. So Center for Individual Freedom was started in 1998. That was long before I joined it. I went to ASU undergrad, went out to USC for law school, practiced law in Los Angeles for about 15 years, but then moved out to D.C., about 10 or 15 years ago. But CFIF, we are a nonprofit organization, and we're essentially dedicated to the principles of limited government, free markets, constitutional law, and fidelity to the text of the Constitution. And so that sort of ties in with this issue of surprise medical billing, in the sense that there are some good solutions being proposed and there are some bad solutions being proposed. And we, as our name implies, with individual freedom, and as I just mentioned, some of our principles in terms of free market, greater freedom, less government bureaucracy, there are some solutions to this issue that are much better.
So, yeah, no, I have long admired the free market solutions that I think should come to bear on the health care reforms that people talk about. Tell us first, before we get to your free market solution proposal, before we do that, tell us a little bit about the problem of surprise medical billing for those that aren't aware of it. I wasn't really.
Yeah.
Tell us what it is.
You know, for those who haven't suffered this before, they're probably familiar with people who have. So, you know, let's assume you have a medical condition and it's an emergency and you go seek care. And if people have time, they typically make an effort to visit in-network physicians or facilities. You know, you try to do your best to make sure that wherever you're going, yeah, and whichever physicians you're seeing are within your network.
Sure.
But even when you do that and you take great care, sometimes later on, maybe there was an X-ray or specific lab work that was done, and it was by out-of-network entities.
Right.
It's not as though they come into you and read you a list, and you just have a handy sort of coordination list.
Right, no menu, so to speak.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so later on down the road, you get these bills in the mail for your treatment and demanding payment for them, but they weren't covered by your insurance. And so that creates this unexpected and, frankly, unfair situation for people who are just trying to live. You know,
yeah,
you're getting
sure.
medical care.
Yeah, right. They thought they were covered. They thought they were covered for their visit, and they weren't, is what it turns out.
Absolutely. And so sometimes you're not even conscious of these things. Maybe
right.
you're sedated or
sure.
anything else. And so that's the issue that we're facing here. And rightfully so, Congress and elected officials are contemplating solutions to it. Unfortunately, as I said earlier, some of those solutions are not so good. And unfortunately, some people who otherwise demonstrate pretty good judgment typically in Congress are proposing some pretty bad.
What's
ideas.
A bad way? What's one we don't? What's the route we don't want to go? What's the route you propose?
Well, the most common proposal that we say is bad is it's something that would establish this government mandated rate.
Okay.
So essentially a price control.
Yeah, a rate setting approach.
On,
yeah.
Exactly. And I think most people listening right now can think back through history and when has price control worked, you know, with gas lines in the 1970s, obviously in Venezuela, it's going on right now. What that does is create artificial shortage because you can change the price of something, but you can't change the cost of something. And so if you're imposing government-controlled price controls and they're below what your cost is, you're not going to have that. And so what that'll end up doing is hurting the healthcare industry and consumers because things that may be available right now won't be available then. And so what they would do, this proposal, and Lamar Alexander, who I referenced a moment ago, is typically good on most issues in Congress. This is one of his proposals, and frankly, it's a very bad one.
Okay.
And what it would do is create sort of an average rate based on discounted in-network averages. So what that does is it would help insurance companies because they're the ones who negotiate a lot of these
sure.
discounted averages. But unfortunately, it wouldn't be good for patients, and it would cause a lot of local hospitals and emergency rooms to suffer losses. And so the best way to think about this is it's essentially a government price control
sure.
dictated by federal bureaucrats. And that's something we want to avoid, and unfortunately, Lamar Alexander's bill would do that. But frankly, or fortunately, there's a better alternative, and it's essentially a form of alternative dispute resolution. So the good bill that we do favor is sponsored by Senator Bill Cassidy from Louisiana.
Okay.
Now, I think a lot of people are familiar with that name, but one of the reasons that I think people can have a little bit more trust in Senator Cassidy's bill is that he is himself a physician.
Ah.
And so it's co-sponsored by several other senators, and I think people who are libertarians and conservatives will recognize these names and realize that this is probably the better solution when people like this are on board.
I got to hit a quick break, Tim.
Sure.
Can I ask you to stay one more short segment to give us the full-throated proposal for this independent dispute resolution proposal of yours? We'll come right back on the
other. You got to make a commercial break.
Yeah, we'll come right back after this. we don't do government intervention either.
Right.
Thank you. We'll be right back with Timothy Lee from the Center for Individual Freedom, talking about how to fix surprise medical billing and doing it with the least amount of government intervention. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Most people like their private insurance, or say they do anyway, which is why it's so concerning that someone like Elizabeth Warren plans to take away everyone's health insurance, the ones that they have chosen for themselves. But even with the ones that we have chosen for themselves, they don't always cover everything. And that's why we sometimes are surprised to get medical bills we didn't expect to come. Timothy Lee over at the Center for Individual Freedom is proposing a way around that, and he's supporting a piece of legislation we should all know about that was sponsored by Bill Cassidy. Senator Cassidy is from Louisiana, himself a physician. And Mr. Lee, if you will, tell us a little bit more about how his proposal works.
Great. Thanks again. Yeah, and I just texted my mom, who listens to 960 all the time, to tune in quickly if she can hear the rest
of my
interview.
Hi, Mom.
Yeah. So Senator Cassidy, as we were talking about before the break, is himself a physician, and his bill is co-sponsored by people like Senator Rob Portman from Ohio and Rick Scott from Florida, who is also in the medical industry, and David Perdue from Georgia and some others. So, you know, these are a lot of reliable names, and I think that can convince a lot of people listening that this is probably a bill that they can trust a little more.
Sure.
Their bill is called the Stop Surprise Medical Bills Act.
Okay.
And so what it would do, and as an attorney, this is something near and dear to my heart, is essentially bring alternative dispute resolution to this approach. So instead of the government price controls that would be imposed by Senator Alexander's bill that we talked about before the break, this one would essentially create a way by which people could negotiate freely in what's called independent dispute resolution. And it's more market-based. It would hold patients only responsible for in-network cost-sharing amounts. And so it would establish this framework for health insurance and medical providers to negotiate payment terms in good faith. And when there was a conflict, just like people who are familiar with alternative dispute resolution, like mediation or arbitration outside of courts, that's essentially what this would do. So think of this as more of a voluntary dispute resolution procedure as opposed to the government price controls by Senator Alexander's act. And so one thing I would also bring to your attention is we just joined a coalition letter with some other groups that I think a lot of your listeners are probably familiar with, the Club for Growth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, National Taxpayers Union, 60 plus.
Perfect.
CASE, Citizens Against Government Waste.
Oh, yeah, no, these are you're singing the song of my people. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
That's great.
We just joined a letter talking about this issue and sort of echoing some of these concerns.
Fantastic. Well, I hope this can be a down payment and you'll come back again soon. I love what you guys for the Center for Individual Freedom are doing. I see at your website you have a Medicare for All price tag piece up by my good friend Sally Pipes. I like you guys, and I'll have you back soon.
Thanks a lot. Really appreciate it. Next time there'll be In-N-Out Burger, right?
Go Cobras.
Go Cobras. Thanks again.
All right. Timothy Lee from the Center for Individual Freedom. I'm Seth Leibson, folks. Don't go away. We'll be right back.